The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
At the very first Earth Day week with a ceremonial tree planting in 1980, and whereas Mrs. McDonald had a very successful career in government with many prestigious awards such as the Order of Canada, the Order of Nova Scotia, the Order of Ontario, and the Pearson Medal of Peace, and whereas Earth Day is now celebrated on April 22nd and is the largest environmental event in the world. Therefore, be it resolved that all members of this House of Assembly thank Flora McDonald for her efforts to bring Earth Day to Canada. Mr. Speaker, I request waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? It is agreed. Would all those in favour of the motion please say aye.
Aye.
Contrary minded, nay. Motion is carried. Barring no other notices of motion, we'll now move on to orders of the day with oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 12:41. We will conclude at 1:41. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, gas prices are likely to hit an all-time high later this week. As all Nova Scotians are painfully aware, 25.5 cents of every litre that they buy goes to taxes to the government, plus, on top of that, Mr. Speaker, they pay another 15% HST. That is an immoral tax on tax that must stop. In fact, Mr. Speaker, the Liberal Party in their 2009 platform actually pledged, and I will quote, said there should be lower gas taxes, there should be no more nickeling and diming Nova Scotians for basic government services. I'll table that. I'd like to ask the Premier, why is the government continuing to nickel and dime Nova Scotians through the tax on gas now that they have a chance to actually do something about it?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Leader of the Conservative Party for the question, Mr. Speaker. This has been an issue not only for this province, but indeed across the country. As he would know, the actual base price is set, gold markets. The thing that the province we can deal with, obviously, is taxation. We've talked about tax on tax, which we believe, quite frankly, is fair. We need, obviously, the other Atlantic provinces with HST to be part of opening up that to allow the fact that we can decouple those taxes to give the consumer a break.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The price of gasoline goes up and up, and the tax on tax goes right up with it. It's a double dipping by the government into the wallets of every Nova Scotian at a time when they can't afford to pay more. Just last September, speaking about the tax on tax, the Premier said, and I'll quote, Nova Scotians pay a tax on a tax every time we fill up. It's unfair and unnecessary and adds about 4 cents per litre to the price of gas. Well, that is exactly true, Mr. Speaker. It's also true that the government of Nova Scotia needs to work with Ottawa to change the HST agreement to get that tax on tax off of our gas, Mr. Speaker. And the Premier knows that because in the same article that I'm quoting, he actually asked if the Dexter government had ever made the request for Ottawa to get rid of this immoral tax on tax. So I'd like to ask the Premier if he still believes what he said just a few months ago. Has he or any member of his government contacted Ottawa to get rid of the tax on gasoline.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I want to tell all members of this House, Mr. Speaker, the fact that I've very much enjoyed continuing to build a positive relationship with Ottawa through Minister McKay. We've talked about a whole host of issues. The leader of the Conservative Party may not be aware that in May I'll be meeting with Atlantic premiers. As he knows, the HST is in a number of our provinces that require a number of premiers to actually look for the opening up of the HST agreement. Mr. Speaker, it will be one of the parts of the conversation that I have with the Atlantic premiers.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I'll take that answer to be no after 6 months in office on such an immoral tax. Just say to the Premier, if he wants to build a positive relationship with the people of Nova Scotia, he should actually stand up for them and do what he said he would do during the election and get rid of that tax on gasoline because it's wrong and is immoral. Mr. Speaker, the Premier once said, and I will quote, the tax is costing you, me, and every other Nova Scotian millions of dollars for a system that inflates the price of gas. That's very true, and now we are about to see the highest gas prices in our country's history and in our province's history. So I'd like to ask the Premier why he sits by as the tax on costs is costing you, me, and every other Nova Scotian millions of dollars.
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, like all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, I believe the price of gas is too high, but I want to correct the leader of the Conservative Party. It will not be the highest, Mr. Speaker. I will remind him under the Conservative Party, Mr. Speaker, gas prices were actually higher at one point. Not that anyone should take consolation in that, Mr. Speaker. We're going to continue to do what I've said, which is to begin to ensure that we work with our neighbouring provinces to look at ensuring that we can decouple the HST from charging it off the motor fuel tax. I'll also remind the leader of the Conservative Party, the last time the motor fuel tax was increased in this province was under a Conservative Party.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, CBC and other media outlets are reporting that gas prices may hit an all-time high in Nova Scotia this week. And experts are predicting that prices in Halifax could exceed the record high level of $1.45 a litre, and gas in Cape Breton is already selling at close to $1.47 a litre. So my question to the Premier is this. What is he proposing to do to help Nova Scotians deal with these extraordinary high gas prices?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question and inform her, as I said, to the Leader of the Conservative Party, is to work with my Atlantic colleagues to ensure that we put a united effort, hopefully, to work with our federal government so that we can move to decoupling the tax on tax so that we can provide some relief to Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in 2007, when the Premier sat as an opposition member of this House, he made a lot of promises to help Nova Scotians deal with the cost of gas prices. He promised to reduce the gas tax by more than 5 cents a litre, and Mr. Speaker, I will table that. My question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is this. What steps is he going to take to help Nova Scotians now?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Member, since 2007, that the Democratic Party spent 4 years in power in this province and driven us, Mr. Speaker, in debt. This government is actually going to move our province towards a balanced budget, provide relief to Nova Scotians, and job creation, making sure that more Nova Scotians get an opportunity to work here in this province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Premier made many, many commitments and raised many, many expectations around what he would do when he had an opportunity to assist people in this province deal with high gas prices. In fact, in 2009, the Premier promised, and I quote, and I'll table, one of the first things I'll do is scrap gas regulation. We'll reduce the motor fuel tax to 1 cent a litre over a 4-year mandate. Well, Mr. Speaker, The premier has been the premier for 6 months, and we've seen no movement whatsoever on this file. So my question is, now that the premier has had an opportunity to deliver on his promise to help Nova Scotians at the pump, why won't he help them, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the first thing we did was remove the NDP electricity tax, Mr. Speaker, off every car on this province. Mr. Speaker, to begin, Mr. Speaker, come January 1, Mr. Speaker, we'll drive down, Mr. Speaker, power rates.
Order, please. The Premier has the floor.
Mr. Speaker, come January 1, we'll be driving down power rates, Mr. Speaker, and we'll continue to make sure that we deal with the issue of gas prices in this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Another way to help Nova Scotians with the sky-high price of gasoline is to get to work on the west-to-east pipeline, which all Canadians now see as a way to get Alberta oil unrefined to Atlantic markets and beyond across to Europe. Mr. Speaker, in fact, that very pipeline is before the National Energy Board today, starting the regulatory approval process. We know when we read the local newspapers that the Premier of New Brunswick is working very hard to make sure that pipeline gets to St. John, New Brunswick, which will benefit all New Brunswickers. But we have seen no action from the Premier of Nova Scotia to try and extend it here to our province, despite the strong business case to do so and the benefits it would bring to Nova Scotians. So I'd like to ask the Premier if he could list for us what steps he personally has taken to see that the West-East pipeline also comes to Nova Scotia, like the New Brunswick Premier is doing.
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I've continued to talk to the federal government to ensure that that pipeline ends up coming through Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, but I will assure this member that the one thing I won't do with every conversation I have with my political colleagues across this province is run to the media outlet so I can put in the paper to gain political points. Mr. Speaker, this is about doing what's right for Nova Scotia, and that's what this government is doing.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, quite frankly, I have no idea what the Premier is talking about. Other than to say that it's interesting that question period reveals these secret discussions he's having with the Government of Canada, which, after all, is what the purpose of question period is. Mr. Speaker, you know, it is funny, Mr. Speaker, how times change. In opposition, the Premier accused the NDP Premier of the time, Mr. Dexter, of being followers instead of leaders on issues like the West to East pipeline. He's revealing to us his secret discussions that are going on. That's certainly good news. I'd like to ask him, will he actually share with Nova Scotians how he is being a leader on getting that oil flowing into Nova Scotia, like the Premier of New Brunswick, who's quite openly telling the people of New Brunswick he is working for them?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Member that Nova Scotians voted last October. The people of New Brunswick are voting next November. That conversation will be more about political theatre than it is about real results.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what this whole discussion is actually about is having a government for once that when they campaign and make promises, actually do what they say when they get in. Unfortunately, the last time we saw a Liberal Party keep one of its promises, I had a full head of hair, Mr. Speaker. I had to go to the barber once a week. Now look at me, Mr. Speaker. That's what happens after sitting across from that Premier and this government for 6 months, waiting for something to actually change. Waiting for something to actually change. Mr. Speaker, that pipeline would be better for our environment. It would create real jobs, and it would help bring down the sky-high price of gas. Will the Premier commit to this House that he will do all it takes, like the Premier of New Brunswick is doing for his province, to extend that west-to-east pipeline into Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'll ask the Minister of Energy to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I guess it's a shame that the Leader of the Opposition selectively reads news articles, because as was widely reported, the Premier asked me to go to Alberta and meet with both the Alberta government and the proponents of the Energy East pipeline in February, and we did that. And we've had ongoing discussions both with them and with NuStar in supporting NuStar's application. That is actually widely known in the province and the industry. Mr. Speaker, I suggest the Leader of the Opposition get better researchers.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to ask a question of the Minister of Environment regarding the environmental assessment process. Earlier today, I submitted a petition from residents of Colchester County who are concerned about wind turbines, and these are wind turbines that have already been approved for the Greenfield area. The petition is signed by those who will be living in the vicinity of this project and which received approval from the Minister earlier this year. So in light of the petition, I am going to ask what weight the concerns of these citizens were given when the Minister approved the Greenfield Wind Project.
The Honourable Minister of Environment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess a couple of things just to clarify. The petition that was put forward at the start of the session today was actually directed towards the Minister of Energy and related to the CONFIT process, which falls outside of my purview of responsibility. But with respect to the actual question that's been put forward about the environmental assessment process, I'm happy to clarify that process. Essentially, through the process, environmental process, assessment process, there is a requirement for consultation where the proponents advertise and promote proposed activity, provide a period of time for people to provide input. That is all submitted as part of the total package. That is evaluated by myself and staff to make a decision based upon that information.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley, on his first supplementary.
I've been involved with this for a number of months now, and my concern was then and still is the level of consultation that this project has had with the community. Their concerns include potential effects that this project may have on wildlife and nearby residents. Health Canada has been conducting a study into the impacts of wind turbines on nearby residents. This study is expected to be released later this year. Will the Minister review this study once it is released and consider modifying the province's requirements for wind projects?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, thank you again. Thank you to the member opposite for raising some very good questions around this process, because there are a number of people that ask questions like this on various environmental projects across the province. With respect to the decision-making process and that particular study that is ongoing with Health Canada, I want to assure all members of this House, all members of the public across Nova Scotia, that through the environmental assessment process for windmills and other activities, we do, as a department, engage Canada Health, and they are given an opportunity to review the proposed project and provide any concerns that they may have. And at no point has that department provided any, raised any flags with the ongoing proposals that we've been approving in this province, even while their own study is ongoing. And at no point did they ask us to consider putting a moratorium or considering any concerns that they have with health effects in that regard. With respect to when that study comes out, by all means, as any study would affect environmental decisions being made in this province, the Department of Environment does, on an ongoing basis, stay up to date. And that study would be one of many that we review on an ongoing basis.
The Honourable Member for Colchester, Musquodoboit Valley, on his final supplementary.
I do appreciate that information, Mr. Speaker. I also appreciate what this community of residents has already gone through in the last number of months. They feel that their concerns regarding the project were not adequately addressed. So I guess I'm going to ask the Minister, would he be willing to meet either now or at a future time with these residents to hear their concerns in person?
The Honourable Minister of the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, by all means, I don't think I've turned down a request by concerned citizens to meet with me on a wide variety of issues. It's just really a matter of scheduling the time to meet with them and have those discussions. So I'm sure we can schedule something in.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, again, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, yesterday with the announcement of Invest Nova Scotia Board, Nova Scotians learned of yet another broken Liberal promise. Prior to the election, the Premier advertised that his government would turn away companies looking for assistance and send them to a bank. A Liberal government would be the lender of last resort, the Premier said. But as of yesterday, we found out that the Liberal government is more than happy to help private companies with a variety of incentives, which will include free land, capital investments, tax rebates, payroll rebates, and according to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development, even something similar to a grant called a contribution. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. Given that his government is now providing incentives and contributions to private companies, what are the lending standards and collection practices being placed on the Liberal Invest Nova Scotia Board?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to assure the Honourable Member and all Nova Scotians that any decision that is made when it comes to lending money in this province, Mr. Speaker, will be put through a business lens. It will be arm's length from a cabinet, Mr. Speaker. And I want to ensure all Nova Scotians that the way money had been thrown around by the previous government has stopped.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Invest Nova Scotia is a far cry from what the current Premier called for. And at the time, in 2010, for example, and I'll table, the Leader of the Opposition said politics has no place in the loan business and that all government investments would be controlled by Nova Scotia Business Inc. And I'll table that. So by today, in 2014, with the creation of Invest Nova Scotia, the Premier has given a small group of Liberal cabinet ministers the final say in the loan business. One could even argue, Mr. Speaker, that the Premier has taken the loan business from ERDT and moved it to one government place. So my question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is this. Why did he choose to break his pledge from 2010 to hand control of the Jobs Fund over to Nova Scotia Business Inc.?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to remind and ensure the Honourable Member that not only have we've taken the politics, Mr. Speaker, out of lending in this province, we've actually put it in the hands of business people, Mr. Speaker. Recently, we announced the increase to the small business credit with the credit union, Mr. Speaker, which means the province will cover 90% of that lending. It was a program that had been put in place for some period of time, had huge success. It was actually the credit union that was actually reviewing the business plans, making sure that it was being done on sound business principles. What we have done and put in place is to ensure that we provided some a cover so that credit unions across this province, regardless of size, will be able to participate in that program. Huge success for employment, Mr. Speaker. It hits every community across this province. What we've done in and around Invest in Nova Scotia is put together an arm's-length body of business people who are making business decisions. One of the issues that we've heard from businesses across this province is that NSBI really deals with large corporations. Mr. Speaker, what we put in place is something that will deal with small business owners across this province, will help the economy grow in every community. And let me assure the Honourable Member that it will be made on business case, not on the political lens that government put it on.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I've had the privilege of serving on boards of credit unions throughout my career, Mr. Speaker. They're a fine institution, as the Leader of the Opposition could attest to. We all love the credit union. But really, I'm not sure what that has to do with the political control that exists in that cabinet over the Invest Nova Scotia Fund. So, Mr. Speaker, I do want to give the Premier some credit for being forthright yesterday with Nova Scotians when I asked why Liberal Cabinet ministers would still be involved in making investment decisions to private companies. The Premier responded, and I'll table the answer, that this fund is no different, he said. And he went on to say, at the end of the day, it's the government that is paying the bill. So my very final question for the Premier is this. I think I've hit a nerve, Mr. Speaker. So my very final question for the Premier is this. Prior to the election, the Premier told Nova Scotians a Liberal government wouldn't be paying bills for private companies. Mr. Speaker, why did the Premier change his mind?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I think, Mr. Speaker, if the leader of the New Democratic Party was actually being forthright, she would actually identify that what we said is that the model that Invest Nova Scotia is based on, the NSBI model, Mr. Speaker, which, quite frankly, allows arm's-length business people to make the decisions. As she would know, as a member who sat in Cabinet, NSBI decisions above a certain amount arrive back at the Cabinet table. Mr. Speaker, most Nova Scotians were surprised to know that. But that's the reality of what happens, because at the end of the day, Mr. Speaker, it is the government that pays the bill.
I'd just like to remind the Premier, before we continue, that to indicate that the honourable member across the floor is not being forthright is somewhat unparliamentary. So. Thank you. The Honourable Member for Pictou West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, yesterday I asked the Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage about the member for Lunenburg's involvement in the Blue Nose 2 restoration file. Before the Minister could respond, the Premier was on his feet, dancing around the questions and relying on empty, angry rhetoric. Nova Scotians were still left with unanswered questions. If the Premier is going to muzzle his ministers, will he at least provide taxpayers and tourism operators with the answers they deserve himself?
The Honourable Premier.
Absolutely, Mr. Speaker. Absolutely, Mr. Speaker. It's why we've invested heavily in ensuring that the Yarmouth Ferry is in place to ensure that we grow the tourism operations across this province. And I want to ensure that the Honourable Member across the floor, that the member from Lunenburg has not only been on this file with the Minister, she's been in the Premier's office, Mr. Speaker. And let me tell you, Mr. Speaker, the people of Lunenburg appreciate the hard work she's doing, because she's been forthright and honest with the people of Lunenburg, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her first supplementary.
This is a very serious issue for South Shore residents and businesses. The economy of the region has already been crippled at the hands of the previous government and the Liberals. By refusing to answer questions about the Blue Nose 2, are leaving everyone in limbo. At a time when Nova Scotians are seeking leadership, the Premier resorted to empty, angry rhetoric. Will the Premier apologize to the tourism operators and taxpayers for his angry outbursts and give them the answers they deserve?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I want to remind the Honourable Member, while the former government may have actually made it worse, it was that government that created the problem in the first place, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, and as I said yesterday, we will fix the problem.
The Honourable Member for Pictou West on her final supplementary.
The Premier's angry outburst yesterday suggests one of two things must be true. Either the Liberals have completely lost control of the Blue Nose 2 file, or they intentionally are keeping Nova Scotians in the dark. Either way, Nova Scotians are tired of the political gamesmanship and empty, angry rhetoric from the Premier and his government. So which is it? Is the Premier going to explain why he's been hiding the facts, or is he ready to admit that when it comes to the Blue Nose 2, he's completely lost at sea?
The Honourable Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we brought in the Auditor General, Mr. Speaker, to deal with the issue of the problem that was caused by the Conservative Party, Mr. Speaker, and made worse by the Democratic Party. But, Mr. Speaker, I want to remind all members of this House, the member from Lunenburg has always stood up and been forthright with not only with their constituents, the people of this province. The member from Pictou West, who's asking this question, on one hand, talks about cleaning up Boat Harbour, Mr. Speaker, doesn't do anything, Mr. Speaker, about the mill, Mr. Speaker, creates some wanting in on both sides, Mr. Speaker. Let me tell you, when you talk about being honest with your constituents,
order,
Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. Order, please. The Honourable Premier has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to assure all members of this House, Mr. Speaker, that the Blue Nose issue that was begun by the Conservative Party and caused by the NDP Party will be solved by the Liberal Party.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is through you to the Minister of Education. Mr. Speaker, yesterday, the Minister of Education was quoted as saying that she expects every member in this legislature will advocate for their schools, their own schools, and for their own community, but that she will not interfere with the process. That is not the responsibility of the department, end of quote. My question, Mr. Speaker, to the minister through you, if parents and MLAs want to advocate for the protection of their small schools, how should they do so and to whom?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I would like to acknowledge that the member did hear correctly when I made my statement yesterday. I would expect every MLA to advocate for the schools and the communities that they are the MLA. And she also did hear correctly that it is not the minister's policy, it is a school board policy, and I will not interfere with the school board's policy.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's on her first supplementary.
Thank you to the minister for her answer. Mr. Speaker, the position of the minister just took doesn't seem to square with the actions of the member from Antigonish prior to last fall's election. The now Minister of Environment has stated publicly that he has very little faith in school boards' abilities to make these kinds of decisions. In fact, an organization he represented took the Strait Regional School Board to court when they were going through their school review process. So therefore, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister is, when did the Minister of Environment meet with the Minister of Education to discuss his animated position on school board involvement, and what was it about his arguments that she found so unconvincing?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have no idea what the question is, but I will provide some information. Just for the member's information, the situation that she spoke of was not taking the Department of Education to court. It was actually taking the school board to court.
The Honourable Member for Chester St. Margaret's on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'll table this. This is a CBC News posting of December 1st, 2010, and it says, and it would be the Minister of Environment as a spokesman for the Save Community Schools Group, said the board was using misleading and erroneous information when it was trying to justify closing a number of schools in the district. So, Mr. Speaker, obviously the ministers haven't spoken at all on this issue. Prior to the election, the now Minister of Environment was so passionate about his opposition to school board involvement in these decisions. He launched a lawsuit against the board, encouraged everyone to write to the Premier, and berated board officials to point where he was asked, and he was even asked to leave a meeting. And I can table these documents. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the minister, Has the Minister of Education schooled the Minister of Environment on how the position of his Liberal government will be the exact opposite of what he advocated to prior to being elected? And will he now be using her speaking notes at future board school board meetings?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
By the hour.
Well, Mr. Speaker, another amusing statement, I guess. But I would, in response to the minister, remind her that in 2010, I believe there was another Minister of Education, I believe there was another party in power, and any concerns that she now has about what happened in 2010 perhaps should have been addressed then.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question today is for the Minister of Finance. Well, in opposition, the new government was quick to lash out at the mistakes that the old government was making, especially around the HST increase. But now in government, while they're in government now, those lashings have now become excuses. And Nova Scotians were expecting an HST cut. Families were hoping the cut would help them make ends meet. Businesses were hoping it would help them increase sales and ease pressures on cash flow. Promised tax relief in the budget when the budget is balanced, after the incredible increase in spending that we've seen in the budget table just a couple short weeks ago, Nova Scotians are now worried that they are saddled with the same reckless spending that they saw under the NDP. So my question for the minister today is, why is the government willing to continue to increase government spending instead of helping families and businesses?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the question from the Honourable Member. Mr. Speaker, first of all, during the last election, which was just held only 6 months ago, the Liberal Party was very honest in its approach in saying exactly what we could not afford. And, Mr. Speaker, that was done in the face of both other parties promising reductions which are frankly not affordable, given the frank and honest assessment that we saw in the budget that was presented here earlier this month. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I hardly think a one-hour question period is long enough to get into the promises of what were made to Nova Scotians during the campaign and what they're seeing delivered now. But what I will say is, while in opposition, the now Premier was quoted as saying that the NDP HST increase was taking the easy way out, and I'll table that for the benefit of the House. The now Premier was also quoted as saying, quite frankly, they, the NDP, picked the easy one, raising taxes, and I'll table that. That's two separate quotes, and there's many more. It was a complete theme of the opposition, of the now government while they were in opposition. So my question today to the minister is quite simple. What has changed? Why is the Liberal government now content to take the easy way out?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as a new government and certainly as a new finance minister, we looked at the sources of revenue that this province has, and we looked at the tremendous needs that we have, and we looked at the lower economy that we've seen over the last 4 years, which has resulted in the deficit that was in place for both last year and this year. And we certainly have been honest with Nova Scotians in saying we cannot afford to lose the revenue that comes from the HST or from other taxes at this time.
The Honourable Member for Pictou East on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And obviously, governing is about establishing priorities. And it certainly seems to be a priority of this government to not worry about the revenue side of it and just jack up the expenses as high as they can, because as we've seen, $400 million in new spending. The CFIB business barometer was released just earlier today, and I'll table that document. Some advice from the Minister of Transportation, which I always appreciate. Apparently we are now going to try and debate whether the spending of the government has increased this year or not. We might as well get back to our discussion of whether there'll be more bureaucrats this year.
Does the member have a question?
The member has a question.
Order, please. The Honourable Member for Pictou East has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The CFIB Business Barometer was released earlier today for April. Nova Scotia business confidence is now 8.8 points below the national average and second lowest in the country. And under the category of major cost constraints, 56% of Nova Scotians' businesses responded that taxes and regulatory costs are a major cost constraint. The past government stalled economic growth, and now the current government seems quite content to continue in their footsteps. So my anxiously awaited question for the minister is, will the abundance of information showing our stalled economy, with the abundance of information showing our stalled economy, why is your government continuing with the status quo?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about taxes and the regulatory environment here in Nova Scotia. As members of the House are aware, we have instituted and begun a tax review. It started in February and it will wrap up this fall. The information from that is coming from the business community. We're getting feedback from individuals. We're talking to academics, to economists, to people across the province. And that information is going to very much point to regulatory burdens that we can change and also to taxes that people find most troublesome, particularly the business community, because the aim of the review is to try and stimulate business activity and growth and job creation. And I have a lot of faith in that process, and I hope that the member will participate. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, in 2007, the current Minister of Finance spoke in opposition favourably about the Conservatives' decision to expand the post-secondary graduate tax credit. The Minister said, and I quote, "There are a number of initiatives which we support in the budget and have strongly advocated for. One of them has been the post-secondary graduate tax credit," and I'll table that, Mr. Speaker. So my question is, why does the minister think it's okay to tell post-secondary students one thing in opposition and something entirely different when in government?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Madam Mr. Speaker, and to the Honourable Member. The date she's referring to is 2007, and I think it's interesting to note that in the election of 2006, a similar program, a graduate type of tax credit, was proposed in the Liberal platform. But by 2009, it was no longer in our platform because the evidence was rolling in from other provinces that it didn't work. And also because other groups like the student groups, even back in 2009, were writing and saying they didn't believe it worked. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, I'd ask the minister to table all of that information that's been rolling in from other provinces. Because, Mr. Speaker, additionally in opposition, the minister acknowledged that in order to retain graduates, Nova Scotia needed to be competitive. She said this about the graduate tax credit, and I quote, "Other places are offering it, and we need to be competitive." And, Mr. Speaker, indeed, other provinces continue to offer this credit. Manitoba, New Brunswick, and Saskatchewan have this type of incentive in place. So my question to the minister is this. Why does she think Nova Scotia no longer needs to compete to be an attractive place for graduates to live, given the evidence of the Ivany Report?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And in fact, when we review a program and you see that it doesn't work, it's our responsibility, as it was the previous government's responsibility, to review programs and to look and see whether they're effective. When they're not, it's our responsibility to Nova Scotia taxpayers to do the right thing and to change and do something different. And that's exactly what we're going to do.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, two-thirds of those who used the graduate retention rebate in Nova Scotia were young graduates between the ages of 20 and 29. And approximately 50,000 post-secondary students attend institutions in Nova Scotia each year. The second highest number of students in Nova Scotia from out of province come here from New Brunswick, where they offer a $20,000 rebate credit to graduates who live there. So my question, Mr. Speaker, is how can the minister think that the elimination of the graduate retention rebate won't impact the decision of students from New Brunswick to return to New Brunswick and not remain in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the biggest question that all of the parents I've spoken to and young people that I've engaged with, not just in the last few months as the pre-budget tour went underway, but for years, the question has been, how can my young people and my family get that first job? And that's what we're going to address. A tax credit addresses the need for people to be rewarded when they have the job. We want people to get that job, to be able to stay in our province, to contribute for years to come. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cole Harbour Eastern Passage.
Mr. Speaker, I've been contacted by the people in my riding of Cole Harbour Eastern Passage who suffer terrible from Lyme disease and the pain it inflicts on them. Mr. Speaker, I realize there are ongoing initiatives with the government to try to address this awful disease, but more needs to be done. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister of Health is, what can the people of Cole Harbour Eastern Passage expect from this government in the future to ease the burden of this disease and provide them with the care they need?
Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and pleased to respond to the member and really to all Nova Scotians that Lyme disease has become a top-of-mind issue for more and more Nova Scotians. We now have six areas that are identified as the hotspots where the black-legged tick habitat has a greater concentration and therefore the possibilities of contracting Lyme disease. I think what the department has been able to do in conjunction with Doctors Nova Scotia is to inform to doctors to provide a greater degree of education on identification when Lyme disease is evident. But more important, I think, are the programs to make Nova Scotians aware of the precautions that they can take. And again, on the website and through pamphlets and posters, to still, you know, to go out and enjoy the outdoors, but by taking a number of very simple steps, they can reduce the possibility of a tick bite. And that's, I think, the important measures. At the current time, we are improving research at the IWK to make sure that when Lyme disease is contracted, we're able to do the double testing procedure to quickly confirm Lyme disease and to give the appropriate treatments.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Minister of Education, Early Childhood Development. Yesterday, the Minister unveiled another model for closing schools. It seems, however, that the new process will be cold comfort to parents and students in the Senecto Central School Boards, whose schools are on the chopping block. My question to the Minister, will the Minister assure parents and students at Highland Consolidated School Middle School in Westfall, East Pictou Middle School in Sullins River, and Wentworth School, that their schools will have a chance to go through the new process?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Member Opposite, for the question. And it's true that we did introduce Bill 63 yesterday. The bill was designed to put in place a new process that will allow communities and school boards and municipalities parents, school advisory councils to come together, to trust one another, and to work through a process that will allow school boards to do what is their responsibility, and that is to review schools and, if necessary, close schools.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there's no argument that the school review process was broken, and that's why a new process was developed. However, it's not fair that parents and students and teachers in one region are being forced to live by decisions made in a broken process. My question to the Minister, will the Minister immediately direct the Chinecto Central Board stop moving forward with the former broken system?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I stated yesterday, and I will state publicly again today, that this bill is not to reverse decisions that were made by previous boards or under previous government, but it is a go-forward bill that will allow the schools and the communities to come together in hopefully what will be a trusting relationship that allows the best interest of kids to be part of the decision that's made.
The Honourable Member for Pictou Centre on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there is a precedent, as the Minister knows well, for a Minister of Education to step in when a school board isn't meeting expectations. And I realize that under normal conditions that you would let the process go through. However, it just seems that with the Chinecto Central Regional School Board that they're not willing to use this new process, which I think would be a very fair process. So now is the time to provide parents, students, and teachers at those three schools with the opportunity, with a fair chance, using this new process. So my question to the Minister, will the Minister help the parents, students, and teachers in the Chinecto Central School Board, in particular those three schools, and insist that the board do the right thing and use this new process?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I would suggest to the member and to all members of the House that if they wish to have some decisions that have been made or will be made by school boards, that they take their concerns or encourage their community members and their parents to take those concerns to where the decision is made, and that's at the school board level.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. Mr. Speaker, Halifax, we learned yesterday in a Statistics Canada report, has the highest rate of gun violence in 2012. Mr. Speaker, I know that the police are doing their part. They have a through their guns and gang team, are doing their part to try to reduce the incidence of gun violence. Can the minister share with us if she has a plan to help police and to lower gun crimes in Halifax?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I very much appreciate the Honourable Member's very serious question, because I've heard many questions being posed to other members that I didn't consider serious, but I appreciate this question. You're exactly right. The numbers are very alarming. We are concerned. Gun violence is a very serious issue. That's why we've worked very hard to bring the ceasefire to Halifax, and in fact, we launched it 2 weeks ago. And I'm happy to report to all of you, if you haven't read the papers, I don't think you've been at the announcement, but it's the first one in Canada. Thank you.
Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and it is good to know that there are things that are happening. Mr. Speaker, the report stated that young people between 18 and 24 were accused of firearm-related crime at a higher rate than any other group. And, Mr. Speaker, I think of mainly young men that are carrying guns, and it's startling the violence that our young people are exposed to. It's glamorized in movies and video games, and I guess as somebody who's grown up in an era where video games were more like cartoon characters, and we see the degree of violence that we're seeing in video games today, no doubt it's having an effect on our young people, Mr. Speaker. And sadly, for some of these young men, carrying a gun makes them feel better about themselves. And that is something that needs to be addressed. So, Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister, what specific actions is the Minister taking to prevent young Nova Scotians from getting involved with guns?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We've worked very hard to bring ceasefire to help to the Halifax area. And if we want to reduce gun violence or any violence, we need to work together as a community. And this particular program is one that is community-led. And that is the very significant feature that this ceasefire has. I was at the announcement and I saw the many men that you're talking about. And they were so pleased, and I actually saw some tears in some mothers and grandmothers and young men's eyes when that announcement was made. So we look very forward to seeing it roll across Halifax and seeing a lot of good things come out of it. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we look forward to the success of that program. Mr. Speaker, another thing that the report uncovered was that many law-abiding people who are innocent often come into contact and are affected by gun crimes. In fact, the report stated 60% of gun crimes involve people who didn't know the person that committed the crime against them. So my question, Mr. Speaker, are there extra tools or resources that the Minister is providing to HRM police that will give people here in our capital city confidence that this government is concerned about their welfare and looking out for their safety?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and to the Honourable Member. Justice is working very much in cooperation with the police, with the RCMP, and with all stakeholders in the province to very much address that. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, I'm still attempting to get some answers regarding the recent DCS announcement that there will be a review of discretionary funding for nonprofit organizations. Since the early 2000s, Mr. Speaker, and I think the Minister is probably aware, there have been two previous governments that have reviewed the grants and contributions, yet we know that there will be yet another review. So my question to the Minister is simple. It is, what does the Minister expect to find with yet another review of the Department's grants and contributions in DCS?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the question. The review, the first part of this review is more about putting the house in order at the Department of Community Services, Mr. Speaker. It's about making sure that the scarce resources that are available to nonprofits which do extraordinary work, which aren't done by anybody else in government, are being used to the best that they can be used. And also making sure that this review is done timely in this year, because as per our platform commitment, we will be going to a multi-year funding program starting in the next fiscal year, which the nonprofit sector has been asking for years in to help with sustainability and planning in their own program development. I don't know of any review, and I've been in the nonprofit sector previous to my being elected for 15 years, and I have never heard of a result of a review. So when I have executive directors come to me and still ask the question, how does the Department of Community Services decide who gets what and what is the evaluation with that, and I as minister can't answer it, then those review, I would say, were a colossal failure.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you, and I thank the Minister for her response, and I assure her there have been two very comprehensive reviews. As the Minister knows, many Department of Community Services organizations are already stretched pretty thin based on limited resources that they have to manage with, and as I said, they've been through multiple reviews. So my question to the Minister is this. Is it the Minister's intention to review all groups and agencies receiving discretionary funding from her department, or only those she made reference to that had raised a red flag for her?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We'll be doing a review of our practices within the government to make sure that we have good stewardship and that we are providing the outcomes within our department that we need to be accountable to Nova Scotians. When we're going into a new funding arrangement, which we will be going into next year for multi-level or multi-year funding, we want to make sure that all organizations that receive funding from the Department of Community Services are able to meet the needs of the people that they serve, and while we're also being accountable and transparent to the people of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, I think we all would agree that we need more transparency and accountability from government. And indeed, organizations that are providing important services need to know what the standards and the expectations are. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to table a copy of all of the groups and organizations that receive grants and contributions in the Department of Community Services or from the Department of Community Services for the year 2013. There's a wide array of groups there, Mr. Speaker, groups that work with people with disabilities, child care centres, women's organisations, organisations that work with children. And I would like to ask the Minister if all of these groups will have their funding reviewed as part of this process, or if not, if it's a smaller group, would she please identify that it is a smaller group and provide us with a list of who, in fact, that will be before the end of the session today, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Member, Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd actually like to table the letter that went out to all organizations, not just a small group. They went to all organizations, detailing how we are going to look at a review this year, and then which will lead us into multi-level or multi-year funding for the next fiscal. I would also like to remind the leader of the third party that yesterday I made a $2 million investment through our government department to 23 family resource centres, which had not seen a bump in funding in over 10 years, in which they will be receiving $75,000 annualized on this day forward. I also would like to look at the government platform commitment of $500,000 investment into transition houses, second stage housing, and also women's centers, which do a lot of the frontline work that help families in crisis and vulnerable Nova Scotians. So the commitments that we made in the platform have been fulfilled. They will be more fulfilled in the next coming weeks.
Order, please. Time allotted for oral questions by members to ministers has expired. We'll now move on to orders of the day. The Honourable Government House Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that you do now leave the chair and that the House resolve itself into a committee of the whole on supply.
Motion carried. House will now recess for 1 minute while we arrange for committee of supply.